so important to also give ourselves rest from critical analysis, because we analyze and we solve and we ask of ourselves. We realize the process of change is being with ourselves and accepting that we are already enough and everything we need is already right here. It's about seeing it in a new light.
That was Mandy Barbie, and you're listening to episode 171 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast, where we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset.
The courage to face fears with persistence.
Being able to be present enough in this moment to choose my response thoughtfully.
We have the strength to bend to life stressors, to bend to adversity without snapping, without breaking.
There are only six things that contribute to our quality of life, and they are all experiences.
In every moment, we are deciding who we want to be and how we want to live our lives.
Noticing what your brain is doing and then being able to make choices.
Mobilize the things that we know lift us up.
Fear is not logical. It's primal.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. My name is April Seifert, and I'm your host. Before we jump in today, I want to say thank you for all of you who are coming back to this podcast and for all of you who are joining me, you know, for the first time. My biggest goal with this podcast is to bring to you the best of the best tools, techniques, information from the fields of psychology and life design so that you can live better. And there has been no more important time for us to be using those tools than the present. These tools of psychology and life design and of positive psychology, specifically, I want to highlight that, they can be misconstrued as being things that we only do when times are good. You know, they're things where we can, quote, thrive because we're living our best life, we're doing our best. When in fact, these tools become even more powerful and even more important for us to focus on when times are not easy. It's really easy to control your attention and put it on something when it's something positive or entertaining. It's a lot more difficult to practice intentional control and mindfulness when the world is really difficult around you. So I want to thank each and every one of you for coming back to this podcast, for prioritizing yourself, for saying that you deserve to have some guidance and assistance and support and tools during this time that we're all going through that is so difficult. Thank you for prioritizing yourself and for doing the work that will help support you through the time that we're all going through. I'm really excited about this week's episode. We are speaking with a woman named Mandy Barbie, and she has such an incredible background. Most notably, she was an officer in the U.S. military. She graduated from the Air Force Academy and worked at Langley, which gives her a really interesting perspective. And, you know, in this interview, she talks a lot about that time of her life and the experience she had that, although maybe not all of us can relate to working on, you know, these stealth aircraft, planes, but what we can relate to is our knee-jerk reaction to take on too much. And she talks about that as a part of what happened to her during that stage of her life and how that has led her to a lot of the work that she's doing today. So I want to call that out because this episode is really for those people who feel like you are stretched really thin. It's for people who feel like you are taking on so much. It's for people who feel like you're trying so hard to help create a good experience for the people around you and help everyone else stay positive and stay up and manage the expectations and emotions of other people. And it is exhausting and too much for one person to handle. This episode is for you if any of that resonates. We have a deep conversation about what it means to overfunction and which pieces of that are ours to control and which pieces aren't. We actually talk a lot about how things like the committee in our mind, these voices that we have in our mind that keep us on task and drive us and push us to do more, how there are good intentions behind them, but how they might not be helpful. We talk about self-sabotage. We talk about identity. We talk about the real role of self-care in all of this. And listening to this podcast and equipping yourself with the tools and techniques that you need to thrive is a form of self-care. So I hope all of you get so much from this interview with Mandy Barbie. Let me tell you just a little bit about her. She is the founder of Palladium Mind. She is a transformation and healing expert, and she helps hundreds of people across the globe to overcome anxiousness and really thrive in their life. She uses this unique approach of using imagery in order to help people move past some of the struggles and issues that might be holding them back, or some of the self-sabotage that we talk about during this episode. She loves creating massive and lasting positive changes with other people, and she does this with a very natural and really connected way of working with people. And I think you'll hear that in this interview with her. We had a great conversation. There's a lot of robust information in this episode, and you won't want to miss the end. She has a free gift for everybody listening to this episode, an absolutely free download that you can get, and a link to access that if you want to do a little bit more work. So thank you all so much. Actually, before I jump into this episode, the last thing that I want to mention, once again, if you haven't taken us up on it, right now Peak Mind is running bi-weekly, two per week, psych strength building workshops. They're live, we're on Zoom, and we're teaching some of the tools and techniques that can help you thrive during this time. Mondays and Thursdays at noon Central Time. You can register and get all of the information for these workshops inside the Peak Mind Starter Pack. So I'll link to it in this episode description, but go to peakmindpsychology.com/start. And sign up for the starter pack. Inside the starter pack is a module where you can sign up for the live workshops, but you can also access replays of every workshop that we've done so far. It's this growing library of content that is absolutely free to you for the time being while we are all in these crazy, uncertain times. So we want to make sure that everybody has access to that and to the resources that we know will help you thrive through this. Okay, with that, let's dive into this week's episode with Mandy Barbie. Mandy, I'm so thrilled to have you here on the podcast. As we were chatting before we hopped on to record, we have a ton of things in common, and I know you've got some incredibly valuable content and information to share with this audience. So thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. April. I'm really excited to be here, and I've been listening to all the special gifts that you've been sharing with us as listeners through this COVID ID situation that we're in, and I just have really benefited and appreciate it so much.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, it's such a unique time that we're in. As I've been recording these episodes, I've been kind of giving the date just because I feel like the situation we're in today may be very different than the situation we're in tomorrow. So it's sort of helpful to put things into context. But we're recording this on April 6th. So at this time, we have COVID epicenters in New York and in Louisiana, and a few other places are starting to crop up throughout the country. So we have definitely not seen the peak of this in the US. And that's kind of the stage that we're at as we record this episode. I'm wondering if you can give us a quick background on you and the work that you do. You've got an incredibly varied background as a person, and I am certain that that influences the way that you approach your work as well.
Oh, wow. I really appreciate that as well. Yeah, I'd love to share a little bit about my background. I was raised in the Southeast United States, and I am the oldest of five daughters. My parents were very young when I was born, and my sisters and I are very close in age. I knew from a very early time, we didn't have a lot of military in my family, but I was naturally drawn to military service. And around the age of 11 or 12, I sought counsel from one of my most wonderful uncles who had gone to the Merchant Marine Academy, and he began to help me understand what it would look like to enter the Air Force Academy, which I was later fortunate enough to be accepted into. And so at the age of 17, I shipped off on one of the first airplane flights I'd ever taken to Colorado Springs and entered boot camp at the United States Air Force Academy. I spent 4 years there and then served in the military as an aircraft maintenance officer on the flight line of Langley Air Force Base, working with the F-22A Raptors. And at the end of my, essentially the end of my service commitment, I did a little bit of extra time and just wanted to experience the private sector. And I spent years of leadership out there and started a part-time practice in hypnotherapy on the side while working here in Seattle, Washington, just a few years ago. Actually, entering the fifth year of my practice. And approximately 3 years ago, I took that practice full time because I believe it's my calling to help people access their own inner resources. And I'm passionate about sharing the fact that it's possible to heal and not manage certain negative emotional spectrum issues that people are dealing with and suffering with today.
That's amazing. Thank you, first of all, for your service in the military. My husband was also an officer in the Navy. He was a flight surgeon in the Navy, and he was stationed with the Marine fighter pilots. So lots of interesting stories of different flights that he got to take. Lots of times sitting there trying not to throw up or pee his pants.
Oh my gosh. As
he was in these airplanes going so fast.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that would be a definite problem, one I've experienced before as well.
Oh man. So can you give us just a quick background on hypnotherapy for people who maybe aren't familiar or maybe have heard of it and might have some potentially incorrect preconceived notions of what it is?
Absolutely. Well, hypnotherapy, I actually had a practice before. It was I ran an LLC called Prism Hypnotherapy, and it was the first business that I started. And I just basically rebranded. I run a company called Palladium Mind, and it's just the way that I serve people. It's the mechanism that I can professionally assist other people, because really it comes down to service. But the reason that I rebranded, to be perfectly clear, other than just like aesthetics or preference, it's because hypnotherapy in and of itself is a word, to me, strikes me, and I've seen this time and time again with others, is widely misunderstood. And I think it creates a divide right from the start that's just unnecessary. And so a more universal way of understanding what I do is that I work with imagery with people. So I recently was thinking about this, just kind of diving in and navel gazing and like reassessing what it is that I actually do with people. And I realized I help them relax their critical mind so that they can utilize their own innate capability for imagery, just like images arise to us naturally from our own subconscious minds, from our own awareness in dreams. We can access imagery in waking state too, and it's really easy and it's also really fun. And those two pieces combined with their emotionalized desire for whatever change that we want to create and our trust make change really easy.
Amazing. I love that. Someplace I would love to start, because I think, or love to cover, is before we hopped on to record, you mentioned that in your experience when you were in the military, you have a background and an experience that is very similar to a lot of folks who listen to this podcast. You described a time when you were really trying to do everything. I mean, it sounds like three people's amount of stuff that you were attempting to do at the same time. Can you talk a little bit about that time of life, what you had on your plate and what that experience was like? Because I think this audience will really connect with and resonate with that.
Yeah, I will be so glad to share it. And actually, you know, it's funny because it's Monday morning here in Seattle and I've got a cup of coffee and I've got water and we were just chatting so easily. But when I think about sharing this, I realize just how personal it is. Because as you were reminding me of what we were just speaking about, I realized that pattern didn't stop back then. So let me bring everybody else on board too. When I was in my early 20s, I'd just gotten out of the Air Force Academy. I'd just gone through a really difficult breakup, one in which I had really committed everything, even though it wasn't the right relationship for me. I had eventually bypassed my own inner knowing enough that I was just all in to this relationship I had been in and out of for approximately 5 years. When I lost that relationship, it was fairly accurate to say devastating, and figuring out how to cope with it was a new terrain. And I was just starting my career as a graduate of school and as an officer. So work was demanding, new faces everywhere. And at this time in my life, I was a mega people pleaser. There is no two ways around it. There are no two ways around it. I was holding it all together by making sure that nobody's feelings were hurt. Everybody was okay with me. And this was the only way I knew how to live life. So it was like one speed, one gear, and I was just burning it really hard. And I was really good at doing that. I could manage a lot of different people's emotions from my perspective pretty well. And we get used to coping in that environment and just managing the expectations of others because that's our expectation of ourselves. And then we also have all these other expectations of ourselves. I'll speak in first person, such as I was working on the flight line back then. Actually, I was at the back shop at this exact time in my life. I had run many half marathons before, but I was training for my first full. And the back shop with the aircraft that I was working in was extremely constrained. It was the low observables facility on Langley. So I don't talk about this, feels like way back, but the low observables capability of the F-22 is one of the reasons why it is a stealth fighter aircraft. It's the paintings and the layers that go on the jet that help to absorb enemy radar. So it will not be detected by enemy aircraft. It was fascinating work, but I was there approximately 12 to 14 hours a day, many days of the week. And on top of that, I was just starting my master's in economics at a local university. So it was just like the amount of pressure that I was bearing was just, it really was intolerable. And it takes something else to, something in my life at that time came in like a huge disruption that made it seem like that was the reason that everything was breaking down. But I don't think I've ever really thought about this until this very moment, Dr. April, that it was actually, that was kind of like a red herring, because it could have been anything else that came into that picture. I wasn't going to be able to manage it. And then this kind of catastrophic experience that I had, it's not really relevant, but it made the appearance that, oh, this is the reason. So I was able to fault that thing instead of my own behaviors or inadequate coping skills. And I'll just pause there. There's more to tell.
Well, I mean, it sounds like this is a situation, and this is why I wanted you to go into this. This is a situation that so many of us find ourselves in. And I love that you said, you were managing the expectations and emotions of other people, and that was an expectation that you had for yourself, is that you be able to do that. One of the things that we talk about in Peak Mind all the time is this idea of life design, and one of the central, you know, components of that is that you are at the center of your own life and everyone else has their own life as well. So you are principally the person who's responsible for your own life, but that also means that everyone else around you is principally responsible for their own lives. It's not to say that we don't support each other or we're not there for each other, but when you're taking it upon yourself to be principally responsible for other people's life experience, it's impossible. It's a game that you can't win, particularly when you're trying to do this for multiple people. So, you know, if you have kids and you're working on keeping their experience going and, you know, this joyful, magical experience, and you have a spouse whose, you know, emotional roller coaster you're trying to manage as well as your own and maybe your bosses or clients or whatever, you become this person who's backflipping to try to manage everything around you when the majority of that is not yours to manage. Their emotional state is theirs to manage. And I love, you know, talking with Ashley, my co-founder in Peak Mind, about this, because she has a great perspective on it, where the more we do that for other people, the more that we are the ones that cope for them, we are the ones that manage and block and tackle for them, we take away the opportunity from other people for them to learn to do that for themselves. So we actually handicap other people by doing what we think is best. We're ending up, you know, doing something that's actually hurting that other person and their ability to, you know, develop and thrive on their own. So I wanted you to talk through this time in your life, because it's one that I think a lot of us can be find very familiar. Because we just do it so naturally. We just take on so much that's outside of ourselves.
I could not agree with what you're saying more. And I think the clarity of the distillation of this message is so important. I was just listening to the podcast that came out with the author of Wait, No, It Gets Worse.
I was
listening this morning, and now her name is out of my mind, of course. But
Slaby, I think.
She, you were just speaking about your passion about radical responsibility there as well. And it's, absolutely, absolutely 100% resonates. And I also love I really, really echo the same feeling about, it's like, we can't really, it's like this nuance. I like to play with it. We can't truly like harm the other person because they are making their own choices. But when we think that we are helping, it's just such a beautiful perspective to let into the picture. No, you're not helping. It's not helping. Letting other people be with their own pain is so important. That's what's, and I don't know if I'm jumping ahead of both of us right now, but that's what comes to mind, is I think oftentimes the pain is what is, the pain of imagining that someone else might be going through something difficult and wanting to prevent that is oftentimes the motivation for this type of behavior that I was describing and that you were describing and that we see a lot with people that are highly functioning, is we're trying to help because we just want to alleviate the pain and suffering of others. So it's coming from a good place. But we have to let ourselves have some of that grace too, so that we can actually be truly fit to actually help others. We have to help ourselves first.
Mm-hmm. And I'd love to go there because, again, a lot of us really can relate to being in the position where we're taking on too much, where we are doing three people's worth of stuff in a given day. And you know, it's interesting. We've done some work with with folks inside of the Peak Mind Center, you know, folks who have been in our programs and stuff. We've done some work on setting up, from a life design perspective, self-care routines. And this is something that I could soapbox on all day long. So I'm going to try not to go down a total rabbit hole here.
I love it.
But what drives me crazy about the term self-care is if you Google it or you look on like Instagram's version of self-care, you see bubble baths and manicures. And that is not what the goal of self-care is. The goal of self-care is it's a set of activities that sets you up to be more likely to be able to be the person that you want to be, to show up as the best version of yourself. And that's an individual thing. So, you know, people will do, for example, a morning routine and they get up and they have no idea what to do. They're like, well, I think I'm supposed to get up at 5. So I'll get up at 5 and I do morning pages and I do yoga or meditate or something, right? That's what I'm supposed to do. Maybe. But what I would rather have you do is think about the type of person that you actually want to be. Like, what's the goal? What do you like at your best? And then work backward from there. And what are the activities that you need to do in the morning or throughout your day to show up as that person? And one example that I always give is if you've ever, you can Google it and find like a detailed into the minutia list. But if you've ever looked at Michael Phelps and what the morning routine he has for race day looks like, it is excruciatingly detailed to the point that he steps onto the platform that he's about to dive off of from the same direction every time with the same foot every single time. It is so detailed. And the reason why he does that is because it's a form of self-care. It's a way of getting his mind into the right place so that he can perform as the most elite Olympic athlete we've ever seen. So if Michael Phelps cannot show up as his best without some form of self-care, what makes you think that you can? Right? Like, he's as close to immortal as we have. Like, the guy is the best athlete we've ever known, and he can't do it. So what makes you think that you can show up for your overscheduled, overburdened, overtaxed life without doing it for yourself? It drives me crazy. So
I can hear that passion. I'm just smiling ear to ear right now.
It drives me crazy because people need permission to say, you do not have to have 80 balls in the air. You can get rid of 5 of them to make a little bit of room for yourself so that you can show up in the way that is going to be the best version of you to be able to do the rest of what's on your plate.
Yes, I'm such a sympathetic crier, and I'm just like misting up a little bit thinking about how much permission we all need. I think it's such a beautiful, beautiful, important message, and it's something that we almost can't hear too often.
I totally agree. Something else that you mentioned that I want to go back to is you were saying that lots of times we jump in into other people's, you know, situation and try to manage it for them because we want to prevent the pain that other people are in. And this is something we chatted about a little bit again before we recorded, is we feel, and I'd love for you to dive into this a bit, we tend to feel uncomfortable allowing either ourselves or other people to just sit with something that's painful. We want a resolution really fast. I'd love for you to dive in there a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I got to connect with that. Hold on a second. That's so – let me see. Let me recollect exactly what we're talking about. It's the phenomenon of wanting to kind of jump ahead of process and – experience the result of something without maybe recognizing that there is something that needs to happen first. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. Yeah, this is, I think that, okay, my reflection on this experience, which I do see it all the time. We were also talking beforehand. I come from, it's because I'm such a freaking forcer. I spent so much of my life thinking I'm just going to go harder, harder, harder. I can do more. I can pile more on the plate. And I was actually really good at it for a really long time. It's a little bit deceptive. Like, why wouldn't I use this? And who knew there was another way to do things out there? when I see people and I work with people and I coach them, because that's really what I'm doing, is I'm helping people to guide their own attention in a different way so that they can create their own change within. Because if I could change their mind, I'd be a magician. And I can't do that. But they can direct their own attention. And fortunately, people trust me and allow me to help them do that. But the thing is that what most often is the symptomatic presentation is we're like feeling or perceiving, deciding or interpreting that we're supposed to be somewhere else, but we're not because we're where we are. And that makes it wrong or us wrong. And this perfect setup for pain and struggle is actually just a misperception, in my humble but expert opinion. This is just misperception because, and the, we do it to ourselves. I've got my hand raised right now. I do it to myself. I can do it. Oops, I just bumped my mic. We can do it to ourselves daily. Is we think, oh my gosh, I've been through so much. I've come so far. I've done so much work. Why am I not where that other person is? So we're grading ourselves against this very arbitrary determination that we are not in a position to accurately judge. We don't have the big picture yet. We don't have hindsight yet from the present moment. But if we could pan out and see our process end to end, when that happens for people and they're able to experience that shift in perception, shift in perspective, oh, yeah, it's okay. Like all of a sudden we get that relief. And so I feel like there's so much I could say about this, but as I'm speaking, one thing that comes to mind is why it's so important to also give ourselves rest from critical analysis, which, you know, just happens to be my soapbox a little bit, because we analyze and we analyze and we analyze and we solve and we ask of ourselves. But even in meditation, sometimes what I see people do is they've got it as another thing on their to-do list. And the understanding, the bridge of understanding hasn't been built yet, that this 5 minutes of presence with self is an opportunity to be free of the chatter, to be free of the to-do list. And that connect, when that awareness happens, then magic really can unfold, because we realize the process of change is being with ourselves and accepting that we are already enough and everything we need is already right here. It's about seeing it in a new light.
That was beautiful. I was just like taking a note on that about, you know, what you just said about the process of change is just being here right now. That's amazing.
Thank you so much.
I mean, you mentioned something about this critical voice that's in our head. Something else that Ashley talks about a lot is that, and I like the analogy she uses, that we all have this committee in our mind, and many in our committee members may differ. Some people may have a very loud committee member that is, you know, their great aunt who's very critical of everything they've ever done. And this voice that tells them that they're not good enough and they're not doing enough and they're not, you know, they're never going to succeed. And like, who are you? Other people, you know, I myself have a very loud taskmaster and I have a very loud logistics person in my head. So my chatter isn't so much self-deprecating as much as it is, you need to be doing more. There's a more efficient way to do this. You need to find a better way to do this. What else is on your to-do list? It's this taskmaster logistics person that keeps me in a state that of unease. And I mm-hmm. love that you were talking about taking that moment to remove that critical layer of chatter and just allow yourself to be. You probably can't shut your mind off and make them stop, but you do not have to follow them for that 5 minutes, just give yourself permission mm-hmm. to take a break.
Yeah, this is something that's coming up right this second that I think, one, I love your reflection. It's really so valuable for I feel so much value that I gain when someone can reflect back to me something that I've shared, because then I also get to see it in a new light and experience it in another. There's layers and layers and layers of understanding. And so thank you. I also think that there is this, I want to give an extra opportunity for listeners on top of that, like, and when these voices come up and then we're sitting with them, one of the things that is so, so crucial to me helping anybody is helping to educate that each of those voices has a reason. Every single one of those personalities, the taskmaster, the logistician, the critical one that's going, well, not quite, you're not that good yet, you know, whatever those voices are doing, each of them has a positive intention for us. And this is where I truly become like emotionally connected to, because wow, from that light, we want to almost keep company with those sweet ones, because they're working overtime. They're the parts of ourselves that are working overtime. I hope that, I don't know, that just came to mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Creating space and forgiveness for the reasons why they're causing us these beefs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the intentions are the best of intentions, right? They, there's a very big protective component to a lot of these and keeping us from, stepping outside of our comfort zone and potentially failing or, from getting hurt. It's actually really related. And what I would what I don't want us to miss out on is talking a little bit about it starts to flirt with this notion that I know you're passionate about too, of self-sabotage. Like you find it as people start to branch out a bit more. Can you talk a little bit about that notion and how you've mm-hmm. seen that come up for people?
Yes, I have my own way. I have a way of understanding self-sabotage, and because I work with it so frequently, I kind of see that self-sabotage is, it sounds kind of like a dirty word to me. Like when I think in daily vernacular, it sounds kind of like, you know, it's the thing that we really don't want to happen. But actually, I almost see it as a lens for understanding why we don't have everything that we want, or why anything isn't working exactly as we want. It kind of comes back to self-sabotage. And the reason that I say this is because I understand sabotage to be, well, we want either intellectually or emotionally this one thing, but try as we might, we continue to act or feel in some way separate from that. Is this making sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Okay, cool. And so what this shows us is, it's such interesting information, because then we can go, okay, what is this showing me? It just shows us that part of us is convinced we want the thing, and then part of us is convinced we either can't have it, don't want it, or want something else instead. And so then, if that is true, we're really just back in that discovery process, which isn't easy. I'm not trying to minimize the work that's required or the resistance that must be overcome or the pain that must be felt in order to bring parts into alignment. But at the end of the day, we're just trying to understand, okay, wait a second. So what's going on here? Because we are the parent of ourselves. We are the person who's stewarding all these little parts. And go, wait a second. So who's got the beef? Who's concerned? What's the fear? And then we really get to be curious. Sabotage starts to like strip away, just fall away. Mm. The more that we can bring awareness to those.
I love that. It's, you know, it's, sometimes we talk about difficult emotions, for example, as being not the end point of an experience, but rather as just another input of information for us to consider. And that sounds very similar to this, where you're finding yourself in a position where you're at point A, you want to get to point B, but you're having an impossible time getting there. And you're finding yourself, doing things to keep that from happening, either consciously or subconsciously. It's funny because I'm struggling to remember the book that I read that said this, but it basically said, you will never allow yourself to have or to become something that you hate. So I think this was in the realm of money that I was reading this, but it's like, if you have a notion that somehow, someone who has that thing that you want is greedy or bad or doesn't deserve it or is some other negative thing that you hate or that you don't like, you're not going to allow yourself to become that. You're also not going to allow yourself to become something that is like diametrically opposed to your own identity. There's a reason why we have a self-identity diagnostic in the Peak Mind Starter Pack. If you guys haven't taken that, I would highly suggest just go over to peakmindpsychology.com, sign up for the starter pack, and you can get, immediate access to it. But there's a reason why we put that self-identity diagnostic in there, because when you start to see what the contents of your own identity are, you start to see it's another input into exactly what you just said. Why might I not be able to get to that point? Well, this is completely opposed to something that I believe that I am. And so to get there, you're going to have to shift that belief a little bit, and you're going to have to loosen the reins on who you think you are in order to get to a place that is different from where you're at.
Yes, 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 so much, yes. And I think this is where, when we talk about the work, this is where it can feel a little bit icky or challenging, because sometimes the reason that we can't have the money or get the job or whatever, it's not always those beliefs where we're turning back onto ourselves, like, oh, I'm not good enough or whatever, because that's very present for a lot of people. But it can also be the judgments that we make about others. And having the bravery and the courage to actually look at and review our own judgments that we're making and take that radical responsibility, like you are such a positive and amazing proponent of, that really takes courage, because we have to admit, is this really the belief that I want to be holding? Is this really the judgment that I want to be making? So yeah, but once we do that, if we just get cozy with that discomfort of accepting, I am really doing that, then the work becomes very quick, very rapid.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I talk a lot about the just brutal honesty that you have to have, right? There are things about ourselves that we don't even want to admit are true. We don't want to admit that we hold that judgment about someone else. We don't want to admit that this thing actually scares us. We don't want to admit that it's not that we don't know what to do next. It's that we're afraid of what will happen when we take that step. There's these pieces that are really difficult for us to admit, but the only way forward is to be completely honest with yourself about what is actually going on. You don't have to tell me. You don't have to tell anybody else. You don't even have to write it down on a piece of paper. But just in your own mind, get honest with yourself about what those judgments might be, or what, the fear might be behind it. Mm-hmm. Because as you said, once you can do that, and I'll actually give a really concrete example here. So I mentioned it's April 6th. We are in the midst of this, COVID situation. And something for me that has been very much a part of my identity is that I grew up without a ton of money. I've shared this a lot on prior episodes, but we didn't have very much money when I was growing up. And it didn't help that my dad went through cancer treatment. It didn't help that I had MS and my treatment was very expensive. None of that helped the situation. But because of that, it is in my ingrained identity that I'm the type of person who doesn't have or get nice things, that those things are not something that are available for people like me. And as this COVID situation has happened, and as we've had to shelter in place and quarantine and stay in our homes, I had to cancel an office space that I loved. I adored it. It's beautiful. I love everything about it, the way the lotion smells at this place. And it is this wonderful, like just respite, incredible place. And when I canceled it, I just had the most horrible day, like the most tangled up web of feelings. And it took me sitting down, being quiet, and listening to them and getting super honest. And I'm like, oh, I'm sad to this degree about canceling an office, which isn't that big of a deal. I'm sad about it because it's making me feel like I didn't deserve it in the first place. And that's why it's happening. Oh, and at that point, you're right. The work happens quickly because I'm like, no, no, honey, you did not cause COVID. That is why this is happening. Okay, like give yourself a little hug. Like, no, like treat yourself the way that you would treat a child who's coming to you who had a bad dream. Give yourself a little hug. Like, no, honey, that is not why that happened. Like, it's okay.
Right.
And a little bit of self-soothing. But I want to give people that like concrete example because this stuff is sneaky and it's really powerful. And it's like none of us are immune to it, you know?
Mm-mm. No, that's such a beautiful example. I feel that emotion for you too. And it's that's a real one. I feel like the loss that these are little losses too, that are like seemingly little losses, but they're not. And usually it's about what it means from the past. There was a lot of thoughts that were flooding through my mind as you were sharing that beautiful story, but I couldn't agree more. And I'm sorry you had to let that office go. I know what that's like. I have an office like that and I'm extremely attached to it.
Mm-hmm. It's sad. I mean, we're all having to go through those times right now, but such is the situation that we're in. As we're wrapping up today, you have a unique perspective just from the direction of that you come from the work that you do. I would love for you to share a bit about what it means to you for people to be psychologically strong.
I'm honored to be asked that question because it means we're having this conversation, Dr. April. You know how much I love this concept. I resonate completely, and I am excited to share my take on it. Psychological strength to me, probably as you might guess because of those listening might guess because of what I've already shared a little bit, is sometimes maybe my lens is not about working harder or pushing more or doing more. But strength is also about the flexibility. And the image of Michael Phelps earlier, I'll tell a little story. One time I was, I'm an prior athlete as well. And when I was doing my running and I was training and I was doing some yoga in the gym after a very long run, I'd lifted a few weights. I'd done like maybe a 10-mile run that night, and I was stretching on the ground. And a kindly gentleman was like, wow, wow, you're so flexible. And it was a very well-meaning, I wasn't put off by it at all, but it's one of those things, you know, I was like, well, thank you. Yes, I work very hard to become this way. And he's like, well, how do you do that? And he was actually very muscle bound. Like he had big muscles across the deltoids and just huge arms, very, very barrel shaped body and very, very big legs. And I could tell that he spends a lot of time working to build those muscles up. You don't get that way accidentally. And he was just acting so flabbergasted that I could be flexible. And I said, well, you know, every time that you're crunching your weights and shredding your muscles and then the muscles rebuild more and they fill in and they grow bigger and stronger like that. I mean, you have to put in as much stretching as you do building
if you even want to be neutral. So strong, flexibly strong is where, like in my background as an athlete, where you want to be. And I think that's exactly, I think that we share, like, I think that we share this notion as well, but it's an aspect that I really think about a lot when I think about psychological strength, is the ability to flex into other viewpoints and to be soft with ourselves when softness is required or healthy, as well as, another like musculature reference, when in order for that track athlete to spring out of his chocks, he has to coil up. And then in that state of coil, then you can explode with power into the length of muscle that's going to let you stride and go the distance and run the race. And so you really have to be able to stretch the muscle out as well as flex it in order to really express your full strength. So I don't think I said that quite as eloquently as I wished, but those are my thoughts about psychological strength.
I love the analogy. I'm definitely an analogy queen, so I love it when somebody can use a really good analogy. And you're in some very great company, both Josh Trent. He did an episode a little while back. He's also the host of the Wellness Force Radio podcast. He mentioned flexibility in his definition of psych strength. I think he's actually in my intro audio right now. And then Dr. Steve Hayes, who's the founder of Acceptance and Commitment Therapy, he is a very big proponent of psychological flexibility. So you are in very good company with that definition.
Oh, thank you.
As we finish up today, where can people find more information about you and the work that you do?
I would love to connect. So I have a little bit of an Instagram addiction. I'm just kidding. But it is, besides my email list, that's the easiest. I think that's probably the easiest way. Palladium Mind is where you're going to find me anywhere. It's that on Facebook, and on Instagram, it's at My Palladium Mind. Palladium is one of the elements on the periodic table. It's in the platinum group. So if you're wondering how to spell it, you can always go back to that. PALLADIUM. And I have a gift for your listeners specifically around what we were talking about, relaxing the critical mind. And it will require an opt-in, but of course people are free to opt out. It's a download. And that can be found at palladiummind.com/BPS. So instead of having for them to have to spell out building psychological strength, they can just remember /BPS, and they'll be able to swipe something off my site and explore anything else they wish there.
I love it. Thank you so much for taking the time to record today. I know we are in crazy times and people are very pulled in a number of directions. So I appreciate you making the space for us in your calendar and to share your background and your expertise with us. This has just been wonderful, and I really appreciate you being here.
You don't know how much I appreciate having been able to be your guest, and take care of yourself.
Absolutely.
It's a simple fact that nearly everyone in the world could benefit from building psychological strength, but not everyone will put in the time and effort to do so. But today you did. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Building Psychological Strength. Now, if you're interested in building the mental toughness, confidence, and resilience you need to thrive through life's ups and downs, visit us at www.peakmindpsychology.com. Also, if there's someone in your life who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you yourself found this episode valuable, meaning if you took away even one insight that you can use to build psychological strength in your own life, we would so appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. The thing is, the more ratings and reviews we have, the easier it is to get this powerful and important content out to the people who need to hear it. Remember, your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. So choose wisely, my friend, and I'll see you next time on Building Psychological Strength.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.